if you stop in Springfield, Missouri, for example, and stay at the Rockwood Motor Court, which is this great old draft stone motel, and talk to the owner there, Phyllis will say, well, hey, when you get down the road in Paris Springs, be sure you stop in at the Parita station and visit with George. George will greet you and turn a 10-minute visit into 2 hours and say, well, hey, when you get to Tulsa, say hi to Mary Beth at Buck Adams. Mary Beth will send you to Sepulpa to talk to somebody. They'll send you to Oklahoma City and then to Amarillo. And everybody kind of knows each other. And so over the last, gosh, especially 30 years since the revitalization movement really took hold, you've got a bunch of people that they might have a dream. And if they're on or near 66, they look at it and say, you know what? This community exists and I want to be a part of it.
Welcome to the Community Center for Marengo Urbanism, a show about bringing people together from Chicago to LA for just about a century. I'm Kyler. I'll be your host for today. I'm an architect and design communicator based out of Oklahoma City. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest who will be helping us answer the question, what's the deal with Route 66 and what does the future hold for it? Reese Martin, welcome to the show. Could you start us off by telling us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I have a couple of different titles. So I'm the president of the Oklahoma Route 66 Association. I've served in that role since 2019. I sit on a couple of different boards and commissions related to Route 66, but I also currently work for the National Trust for Historic Preservation as their National Preserve Route 66 manager. So I'm out and about on Route 66 quite a bit.
Nice. So I guess let's start with the beginning of your story. Like, what got you interested in Route 66 to begin with?
Well, so the Cliffs Notes version is in 2009, I had a quarter life crisis and I sold everything and left the country. I backpacked for 10 months through Southeast Asia and Europe. When I got home, born and raised in the Tulsa area, came back to Tulsa and thought, well, I've never really paid attention to anything around here. In my travels, I fell in love with photography and writing and history. So I decided to take that and apply it to the Midwest. But even then, it wasn't until 2013 that I took my first trip on purpose on Route 66. I took a little day trip from Tulsa up to Miami, Oklahoma to see the Coleman Theater, which is this stunningly beautiful 1929 vaudeville era theater that really has no business being in a town the size of Miami. So, you know, I was so impressed by it. I thought, well, what else does this highway have out here to see? It took about 2 years to drive the whole thing in bits and pieces. Got to meet the people that were advocates and preservationists and business owners. And I just slowly kind of got integrated into the culture. And eventually I raised my hand and said, how can I help? And they pushed me into the deep end. And here I am today.
Nice. What is Route 66 for anybody who, I guess, doesn't know?
Well, Route 66 enjoys a unique place in American history as it's a highway, of course. I mean, a road that connects place to place, but it's really become so much more than the sum of its parts. When it was established in 1926, almost 100 years ago, it was one of dozens of roads around the country that were formally given a number. Before that, highways in this country were a patchwork of roads. Some were paved, most were not. And, you know, some people stood up and said, hey, this automobile might be a big deal. We should probably do a little bit more planning for this. And a gentleman from Tulsa named Cyrus Avery said, look, if we create a single highway that connects Chicago to Los Angeles going through St. Louis, it could be the strongest commercial corridor in the country. And he was right. He also founded an association in those early days to help promote the road and encourage paving. It took 12 years to pave Route 66. A lot of people that get into it just think it just sprouted overnight. But it was a very concerted effort to create this pathway for people in the middle of the country to get to the West Coast. And because of that, and because of it being featured in books like The Grapes of Wrath, in songs like the Get Your Kicks that everybody knows and has been covered dozens of times, even as far as recently as like Pixar's Cars in 2006, telling the story of Route 66 and the interstates bypassing the communities. You know, it's really become this legendary highway that is a destination for people all over the world that will come and fly into this country, rent a car in Chicago, and drive to Santa Monica as their way to experience American culture.
Yeah, for sure. So, if you were to drive along Route 66, like, what are some of the types of things that you may see?
It's funny, you know, in the 90s, there was some legislation passed federally to study the road, which eventually led to the National Park Service having a corridor preservation program, which lasted for 20 years. And I'm pretty sure it's the only like federal legislation with the word idiosyncratic in it, because the highway is just such this interesting mix of businesses and attractions and landscapes and cultures. You get like a little slice of all kinds of things. And of course, I'm partial to Oklahoma since it's my home. But, you know, you've got a big concrete whale at Catoosa. You've got a round barn in Arcadia, which just a mile down the road is a 66-foot-tall soda bottle. that lights up at night. In Oklahoma City, you've got an amazing domed structure next to a milk bottle that you can pull over and take your picture at. You've got really wonderfully engineered bridges in Western Oklahoma and museums and diners with really great food and some things that, you know, you'll probably want to take a nap after enjoying. So there's so much along the road. Some of it is vintage and some of it, like here in Tulsa, you've got a collection of giants near 11th and Peoria near downtown. These are all new giants, that, you know, new business owners come in and really kind of adopt the kitsch that Route 66 is known for and make their own mark on it. I guess the shortest answer I can give you is it's a patchwork of American culture.
Very nice. Yeah, I would think I would agree with that assessment as well. In terms of like the actual design of the street, how does that look and how are there different typologies that you find like along the route, would you say?
One of the things I love about Route 66 is I'd like to say it's always been a road of the future. It's always been evolving. And originally, like I mentioned earlier, that was just paving it from one side to the other. But even then, you know, these are the early days of road design. And so you've got certain sections of the highway, like up near Miami in the northeast part of the state, where you have a 9-foot wide section of the road called the Ribbon Road or Sidewalk Highway, which is this unique blend of like these concrete curbs and base with an asphalt strip in the middle. And at the time, they just, you know, the legend is that they only had so much money and they figured if you happen to come across another car coming the other direction, you could just pull over and let them go past. To the wonderful like Portland cement sections in Western Oklahoma, where you can drive over this 1930s era pavement and still feel that ka-clunk as you're going across all the panels. You know, Route 66 eventually got so busy it had to be widened. So you have these sections of four-lane Route 66. And then the interstate came in and all the traffic diverted onto what author Michael Wallace calls the super slab. And then Route 66 had to figure out a new life. And so it's still a patchwork today of original pavement from the 30s and some of it even earlier than that to newer alignments, to reimagine sections of the road that may have been updated a time or two. And if you know where to look, you can drive Route 66 and then just off to the weeds a few feet, you can see the old pavement still sitting there. So if you're a pavement and alignment nerd, Route 66 is your highway.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm from Tulsa as well. When I moved to OKC, I kept seeing these signs all over the city that said this was part of Route 66 during these years. And it's like the route like really changed a lot in urban environments. Do you have any interesting stories about that?
So yeah, again, that's another piece that a lot of people, until they really get into it, don't understand, that the road continued to shift and change over its life. Tulsa is a really simple example because originally in 1926, it came into town on 11th Street from the east. And then when you got to Mingo, you jogged north 1 mile to Admiral, where the traffic circle is there. Because 11th Street wasn't paved all the way downtown. Admiral, which was Federal Drive at the time, was paved. By 1932, 11th Street was fully paved, including a little bridge off Mingo Creek, which doesn't even really exist anymore. And folks said, you know what, it'll be easier to just take a straight shot, take 11th Street all the way into downtown Tulsa. We'll go ahead and move the road. Oklahoma City's a little more complicated. I've referred to it as a bowl of spaghetti before, because you've got all these alignments for short periods of time and the belt line that went through the Britton District. And it was all in the way to try to make travel safer and more convenient, which eventually ended up creating the interstate system. But even in areas outside of the major cities, now, the interstate highway system was signed into law in 1956 by President Eisenhower. But Oklahoma had already created the Turner Turnpike and the Will Rogers Turnpike was coming into being at that time. We were a little ahead of the curve. And it's really fascinating to go back and look at the opening of the Turner connecting Tulsa to Oklahoma City and to see the celebrations and the horses and wagons and everyone celebrating, not quite understanding the impact it was going to have on all those towns. So yeah, the road has shifted a lot over the years. And you have people that they call themselves the EFI Club, and I could tell you what that is, but they want to explore every alignment and figure out when it was this alignment, when did it change, can we figure out why? So it's really fascinating, and you can get really into the weeds, literally, on this topic.
Yeah, I'm somebody who's very interested in like urban geography specifically, so I think when I first started seeing that, I was like, there's some interesting things that have taken place here to make this happen. I'm curious about your thoughts on the sort of greater cultural impacts of Route 66. And I mean, you've already spoken on it a little bit, but how the road sort of changed American culture and, you know, vice versa.
Well, some of that was intentional. You know, you had a national organization from the late 20s to the late 70s, barring the World War II years. Their entire focus was promoting the road, putting ads in the Saturday Evening Post, getting pamphlets out into the world, letting folks know Route 66 is the best way west, getting behind projects like the Bunyan Derby, which is a foot race on Route 66 that started in Los Angeles, went up to Chicago, and then on to Madison Square Garden, if you can believe it, which was won by an Oklahoman named Andy Payne. So you had a lot of stuff that was done intentionally to get the road in people's consciousness. And then when the Dust Bowl happened, you had people that Route 66 was the best way to go to California and try to find a better life. So that kind of adds to its mystique and to its quality as kind of a savior, I suppose, but at least a path to something that might be better. Pop culture has turned to Route 66. There was a television show on CBS. I mentioned the song already. It's just this adopted this kind of romantic aura. So all of that has come together to stitch the road today into what we call a linear community, where if you stop in Springfield, Missouri, for example, and stay at the Rockwood Motor Court, which is this great old draft stone motel, and talk to the owner there, Phyllis will say, well, hey, when you get down the road in Paris Springs, be sure you stop in at the Ferita station and visit with George. George will greet you and turn a 10-minute visit into 2 hours and say, well, hey, when you get to Tulsa, say hi to Mary Beth at Buck Adams. Mary Beth will send you to Sepulpa to talk to somebody. They'll send you to Oklahoma City, then to Amarillo, and everybody kind of knows each other. And so over the last, gosh, especially 30 years since the revitalization movement really took hold, you've got a bunch of people that they might have a dream. And if they're on or near 66, they look at it and say, you know what, this community exists and I want to be a part of it. You know, you have the owners of the Blue Swallow Motel in Tucumcari, New Mexico, that bought this place, moved from Chicago, and took the off-ramp, both literally and figuratively, to operate an old-school motel. Depending on the audience, you know, there are times I've also made the comparison to Star Wars, you know, Obi-Wan saying, you strike me down and I'll become more powerful than you could possibly imagine. And so when they literally took Route 66 off the map, people took that personally. And it's just kind of become an ecosystem unto itself.
Speaking a little more on that existing community today, what have been some of the coolest interactions and like projects that you've been able to be a part of along Route 66?
Oh, that's a good question. I've been very fortunate that in my role with the Oklahoma Association and with the National Trust that I've been able to really dig in and get to meet some of these people. The top one has to be visiting with Angel Delgadillo. Angel is a barber from Seligman, Arizona, that is credited with really kickstarting the preservation movement. His little town was bypassed in the late 1970s out in Arizona, and he petitioned the state government for a decade to get it designated as a historic corridor. He was eventually successful. He helped found the first historic association. And then within 2 years of that happening, by 89, all eight states had their own historic association. So none of this movement would have started without Angel's hard work and determination. So that was really special to be able to meet with him and talk with him and learn from his experience. Here in Oklahoma, it's been really wonderful to be involved with a lot of the initiatives Tulsa has undertaken. Back in 2005, Tulsa literally put together a city master plan to help redevelop Route 66. You know, everything from badging on the sidewalk to planters to capital investments like statues to let folks know Route 66 is here. It's been a big part of Tulsa's story for a long time, and it's worth investing in. And that inspired business owners to come to Route 66. It inspired the Tulsa Route 66 Commission to design and implement a neon sign grant, which has lit up over 80 signs in the Route 66 corridor here over the last several years. And so that just has kind of snowballed. And every time a new neon sign goes up, I love to go out and take pictures of it, or a new giant gets built because a business owner wants something to set themselves apart from everybody else. It's just really heartening. And then we can't forget about Western Oklahoma either. You get west of El Reno and the towns really start to spread out. But Weatherford, just recently, you know, they got their own giant and they're really branding themselves a space city. I mean, I'm wearing a Weatherford, Oklahoma t-shirt right now from the Stafford Air and Space Museum, which is another one of those places like the Coleman Theater in Miami that you walk into it and you're just like, I had no idea something of this caliber was out here. It's an incredible facility. But at the end of the day, people just want to tell their story. So whether it's a little cafe in Eric or the museum in Clinton or the Rock Cafe at Stroud, if you take the time to talk to the folks that work there or the person that's next to you, you're probably going to hear a language that you don't recognize, and these folks are going to want to hear your story. And it's just, it's a big family, we say all the time.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm curious as well about, so there's been several projects associated with Route 66 that I would consider somewhat multimodal. So in Tulsa, they're working on a BRT route. I know there is one in Albuquerque. And then there's also like the bicycle Route 66. I'm curious to hear a little more about those and how that fits into everything else.
Well, Route 66 obviously is automobile focused. I mean, it was designed for cars. That's the whole reason it came into being. But the nature of transportation changes and continues to evolve, just like the road does. It's interesting to look back and kind of see the events that happen in life that lead you to where you are. It was, I want to say, 2016. I had a little pop-up event in Tulsa as a photographer at a little building that was underutilized at a street cred event that Tulsa had put together to show what Route 66 could be like if it had bike lanes, if it had a transit system. And we have that now. And that building that I was in with my photographs is now the home of Dr. Custom, which is this great Brazilian restaurant on the corner of 11th and Lewis. That whole area has completely transformed and taken a lot of the learning from that 1 or 2 day pop-up event that happened. But you have increasing amounts of people that are wanting to experience Route 66 in a different way. And I've met with groups of cyclists that they decide that's how they want to experience this all-American road, is on two wheels, not four. So anything that we can do to help encourage that, you know, Route 66 is all about enjoying the journey, not the destination. And I'm all for anything that helps remove hurdles to people that want to take that journey in a different way. I met a monk that was walking Route 66 that came through a few years ago. It's incredible the things that people think of. And the more we can do to make the corridor safer, to encourage people to slow down so that they aren't just trying to get from A to B as quick as possible, I'm all for. And, you know, you get mixed results. If you've got people that live in Tulsa that maybe take 11th Street that are just wanting to get to work and stuff, you always hear people concerned because it's changed the nature of that corridor. They're used to taking that road. They're used to having four lanes and going at a certain speed. And when you introduce bike lanes, that changes that. But I mean, you're in a city, you have a lot of different other things you can take, and anything that can help celebrate the culture of an area when it has something like that to give is great. I mean, Oklahoma City is another example of, it was just in the last few years that all those brown signs even went up to tell folks, hey, this is Route 66 from this year to this year. And you're seeing more and more people get on board with embracing that part of the city's history and figuring out ways to set themselves apart. But I mean, it's not always something that can be done. There's a section of the U.S. bicycle route in Western Oklahoma where they dip pretty far south off of the original highway because that section of 66 is the original concrete with curbs and everything. And there's just not a safe place to ride a bike there without being literally in the middle of the traffic lane that's got more than a few big trucks coming through. So I'm always excited when communities come to me and say, we want to celebrate Route 66 in a little bit of a different way, because it usually means something creative is coming down the road.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of something creative, what are some of the weirdest attractions along Route 66 that you've gotten to visit, or that you haven't, I guess, but I imagine you've been to most of them.
I've been to a lot of them. You know, we take it for granted here because he's been here for a while, but what is a big concrete whale doing in the middle of a landlocked state? I love the blue whale because he is kind of weird. He's quirky, but when you really peel back the layers, it's a love story. Hugh Davis built the whale as an anniversary present for his wife. Hugh loved nature, and that whole park, even before the whale was built, was like an alligator farm and a snake pit, and, you know, come see the critters and we'll take you on a nature walk in the woods kind of deal. So it's a lot deeper than just some really random thing. But it's not just like older attractions like that. In Missouri, there's the Uranus Fudge Factory, which is full of just about as many jokes as you can think of, and then a little more. And he's got this huge, amazing neon sign and all of the, like, you cannot miss it. It's right off of Interstate 44. And I mean, I would say that's probably the best modern example of somebody that really fully embraced that unbelievable dad stop the car kind of deal that you think of when you think of like road trips. But you have all kinds of little interesting, odd local museums and attractions along the road. Gosh, let me see. Weird. I love so many of them. And so I don't even think of them like that anymore because it's really ingrained into my identity right now. I'm sure you've noticed my entire wall here is full of Route 66 paraphernalia. Galena, Kansas, I don't know that I'd say weird, but they've really embraced the Radiator Springs Cars movie universe. That's where the original tow truck was found. that inspired Mater in the film, which they have that truck and you can go walk up to it and get your picture next to him. But the whole town has really embraced that. You've got all these photo stops and other park attractions, and it's fun. Kansas only has 13.2 miles of Route 66. And if you forget the 0.2, they'll tell you about it. And they pack a lot into that small area. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that just comes right to mind. That's an unexpectedly difficult to answer question.
That's fair. There's so many things along the route that it's kind of hard to pick just a couple. So I guess, what are some of the things that you're working on like right now that you are excited about? And what are some of the things that you see as like moving forward into the future for Route 66?
Well, the Oklahoma Route 66 Association's main mission is to preserve and promote the highway. And preserve is key. The road does continue to change, the attractions change, the businesses change, but you have to keep a lot of that historic integrity. There are some things you can't keep from getting demolished or changed irreparably. So we're always at the forefront when we hear of an endangered property or an endangered alignment of the road. Like right now, I mentioned the Ribbon Road up in Ottawa County in Northeast Oklahoma. We had a pretty strong effort last year to convince the county not to tear that out. They wanted to repave it. And we talked about how unique it was, and there's no other place like this in the country. And, you know, we were partially successful. We got one of those 3 miles removed from the work plan, but work has proceeded on those other 2 miles where they're tearing it out and putting new pavement in, which breaks my heart. So you have a lot of difficult things like that. In Clinton, the Glancy Motor Hotel was demolished in 2023, and we tried really hard to convince the city to figure out a way to save it. It was like a 1950s era two-story motel, that great mid-century look, huge sign. The sign got saved, but the motel was demolished. So, you know, that's always going to be the big key of what we do. So with the Centennial, it's really about raising awareness, making sure folks know that Route 66 is still here. It is worth traveling. And it's not just the interstate with a few exits. Like, there's a value to actually being on the old part of the highway. And there's all kinds of celebrations being planned. We're working to put together a big band hangar dance in Weatherford at the Stafford Museum. We're going to do a big car show and Cars movie screening in Sepulpa. At the Round Barn, we want to do a big music and arts festival with a fiddle contest. Oklahoma City and Tulsa are working on their own things, and we want to integrate into that as possible. And it's great to have parties. It's great to have a celebration saying, hey, we hit 100 years. But we're already starting to lead with the next 100 years are even more important. So we're doing what we can to get things into the world to help educate people about Route 66. Right over my shoulder here, you can see this little cartoon dude. That's Flat Will. We just launched him a few weeks ago. He's a little Flat Will Rogers that people can pick up and take with them on the highway to take selfies with at all these attractions as a way to kind of educate people about Will Rogers and his history and the fact that Route 66 is also known as the Will Rogers Highway. So we're working with several film crews on documentaries and other things. It's just, there's so much going on. Like at the end of the day, I just kind of sink into the couch.
That's fair. Actually, so as a architect, I'm kind of interested in hearing about the preservation, like architectural preservation that you guys are doing. I've worked on one project that's a historic rehabilitation, and it is very challenging from what I've learned, especially when there's no money. So like, what are some of the challenges associated with the preservation?
Well, the first one is exactly what you already mentioned, is money. You know, you have resources like historic tax credits and a few other things that have varying levels of support at the state and federal level. This year has been very challenging working with groups that have had funding removed or rules changed and trying to navigate in this environment. So the first is getting people engaged that have the capital to actually properly preserve a building and give it a new purpose. Like, I love adaptive reuse. You know, our association is very small. Our nonprofit is all volunteer. You know, yeah, we've been around a while, but most of the money that we pull in goes towards producing a guidebook for travelers that have maps and things to see and do to kind of help them engage with the road. When it comes to historic preservation and advocacy, all we can do is hope we have a seat at the table and convince people that have more resources to make those kinds of decisions. So my work with the National Trust, we have grants available. When the National Trust gets engaged on a project, you know, they've been around for a very long time. I took a road trip out to the Texas Panhandle 2 months ago, where they're talking about a historic bridge, the last historic bridge that's a part of their Route 66 corridor, and talking about some alternatives rather than ripping it out and just putting a modern bridge in place. One of the biggest success stories we've had in Oklahoma recently is the Bridgeport Pony Bridge. So west of Oklahoma City, west of Fort Reno, actually, You've got this long bridge that crosses the Canadian River near the town of Bridgeport. I say town. It's kind of a collection of houses now. It's the longest bridge of its kind on Route 66, built in the 1930s, even featured in John Ford's adaptation of The Grapes of Wrath. But, I mean, it'd been here for a long time. Traffic has changed. It's a lot heavier, and it was not in great shape. A lot of bridges in this state are in various stages of disrepair. And for years, the Department of Transportation said, look, it's got to go. You know, maybe we can bypass it and leave it as a monument, but there's just no way that it can be continue to be maintained. And after a lot of conversations, a lot of partnerships across a ton of people, not just us, a compromise solution was reached where those trusses were pulled off the side. The deck was rebuilt 4 feet wider, so just a little wider to accommodate modern traffic. And the trusses were reattached cosmetically. The whole understructure was redone. So the bridge is going to last now another 75 to 100 years. But it still has the same visual and experiential identity that it has since it was originally built. Most of these folks traveling Route 66 will cross that bridge today and not realize all that work happened. And so it preserves something. And that was a huge success for us because we know, again, you can't save everything. There's a hotel in Elk City called the Casa Grande, which has been closed since the 60s. A lot of locals are kind of coming together to help fund some revitalization of this building to get some business back in it. So you have other people that are interested, but it takes folks like what you're talking about that are historic architects to be able to come in and say, here's how we can do this. Because almost as bad as letting a historic building like fall into disrepair and get demolished are folks that come in to restore it and make all the wrong decisions. And then it's just this kind of shell that has no historic infrastructure left. And it's just like, oh, you know, I see. But it's a continuous push and pull. The Citizens Bank, the Gold Dome in Oklahoma City, is another one that we're really hoping the right person comes in and is able to save that building because it's such a cool architectural landmark and it could serve as a wonderful beacon for Route 66 in Oklahoma City, but it's also kind of hard to deal with. It's unique. It has its own challenges. You know, here in Tulsa, we have the Rose Bowl, which is a bowling alley that has those great domes and everything. They struggled to get a fire sprinkler system in there, which you would think is not a big deal, but when a building is designed to be unique and really stand out, that means you can't just pull something off the shelf and put in there to meet modern standards. So I know I'm telling you a lot of things you already know. But I consider our job here at this association to be a connector. If you have a developer that's interested in historic properties or a historic property where the owner doesn't know what to do, getting them in touch with people that might have resources or understand how they can go about making the right decisions to ensure that that legacy is kept intact while serving a new purpose.
So what advice would you give somebody who's interested in investing in Route 66? How would you even get started doing that?
Well, first is I would say figure out what you want to bring to the road. You know, are you someone that just wants to preserve the history? Like you see a building that you really like. It's figuring out what needs to be done, how to do that in a responsible way. If you want to bring a business to Route 66, what exists along the corridor that you might be able to adapt into your purposes? I can't remember the name of the gentleman, but there's this great phrase I quote all the time, which is the greenest building is the one that's already built. And when someone's traveling Route 66 and they want to experience the corridor, they're looking for historic structures and places that are evocative of the road's history. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, there's a Sinclair station here in Tulsa that's a window and door company, but they've kept really good condition of their building and people pull over and take pictures of it and walk in and ask them questions all the time. You have the 39th Street District in Oklahoma City, which has a unique place on the road in that it's a district that was really big in the LGBTQ community in the 80s and served as kind of a safe haven. And that's a part of the culture that a lot of sections of Route 66, you know, you don't really see that represented, but they also have some great historic areas. You know, when you start saying historic buildings, a lot of people think back to the 20s and 30s. I mean, National Register listings can be 1975 now, and that kind of breaks a lot of brains. So, but to get back to your original question, I would say if somebody wants to invest in Route 66, the first step is just to find a building they want to save because there are plenty and then go from there.
Sweet. Yeah. I'm curious if there's any more challenging history to Route 66 that, and if there's been any initiatives to try to highlight any of that.
There have been, because, you know, I feel like we're talking about a lot these days is you have a lot of aspects of American history that get glossed over in the history books or, you know, maybe aren't put in a local context. You know, civil rights movement is a big one. There's an old filling station in Luther, Oklahoma, which is between Oklahoma City and Tulsa, that's It was owned and operated by the Threet family. The Threets moved to Oklahoma from Louisiana in the early 20th century, put up a service station on the side of Oklahoma Highway 7, which became Route 66. And from a lot of research that we've done at the Trust, we've done at the Oklahoma Association, and the National Park Service has put together, it appears to be the only African-American-owned filling station on Route 66 during the Jim Crow era. The station closed in the 70s, and the family has been working pretty tirelessly for about a decade now to restore the station and reopen it as an interpreter center to talk about what travel was like for Black Americans when segregation was the law of the land. You know, and that area for many, many years was sandwiched between two sundown towns. So you had towns where African-American travelers, as well as travelers of Native American descent and other nationalities, weren't welcome. And the Threet station served as a refuge for them. So they have an incredible story that ties into a lot of the road's core history, as well as these other stories. Especially people from outside of the country, they want to learn about Native American culture and history when they come through Oklahoma. Maybe they'll take a detour up in Foyle and go see Totem Pole Park. And if you know anything about Native American culture in Oklahoma, none of them use totem poles as part of their cultural identity. And so Ed Galloway, as far as we know, didn't have any ill intent. In the 1940s, when he started making these giant concrete constructions, totem poles were kind of the rage of Native American culture. It was in Life magazine and all these things, and he just became enamored with them. But what a great launching point for people when they pull over to see a roadside attraction like that, to then lead them to the Cherokee Nation or the Muscogee Nation or to First Americans in Oklahoma City, where they can get a little bit of all 39 tribes that are in Oklahoma. Because Route 66 goes through 14 tribal boundaries as it carves through the state from Kansas out to Texas. And each one of them have their own culture, their own story, and their own identity. Again, especially international travelers don't quite understand that nuance. And I mean, when you go further west, you get the Navajo and the Comanche and, you know, all kinds of things like that. So there are a lot of efforts to help highlight the underrepresented stories along Route 66, Hispanic culture. You know, there's a restaurant here in Tulsa called El Rancho Grande, which another historian wrote a really interesting book about food culture along the highway and picked out the El Rancho Grande as potentially the first Tex-Mex brick and mortar restaurant travelers would encounter heading west, because Illinois and Missouri didn't really have much representation unless it was something temporary or a roadside stand. But you could pull over at El Rancho Grande and maybe eat something that your taste buds had never experienced before in the 1950s and 1960s, which is weird to think about that kind of world. Again, the short answer is yes. A lot of different groups are trying to figure out how to tell those stories alongside the familiar story of just the development of the corridor and America through the 20th century.
Sweet. Is there anything from your international travels that you have really clung on to and actually tried to bring to the table here in terms of like something that maybe is not necessarily a historic part of Route 66 that you'd like to see more of along our corridor or anything?
I love the concept of the local expert. When I was traveling back in 2009, 2010, and I was in like Cambodia, for example, if I went to a temple or something, you have your guides and stuff, but you also have locals that if you're in town and you say, oh, well, I'm here to see this, they get really excited. They're happy you're there and want to share what they know with you. Route 66 already has a degree of that. If you have somebody that's come to Route 66 to open a business, they're really excited to be where they're at. And I love to see that continue to develop even beyond the corridor of people that are excited to be where they are and are excited to share their local story with whoever happens to be there from outside of town. So that's a big one. I had the opportunity last year to go back overseas for the first time in over a decade and attend the European Route 66 Festival in Prague in the Czech Republic. They have this event that they do every few years called All American Fest, where they take over the fairgrounds in Prague. And it's like a big Harley Davidson turnout where they have like 700 motorcycles going through Old Town, which is incredible. You have a barbecue section where they teach you how to break down a hog, and heavy metal music and classic cars and dirt bike flipping shows and stuff. And then a little section of Route 66 representation. The Lieutenant Governor of Oklahoma went over there. Our association went over there. A few other organizations came by. And it was a celebration of Route 66 as a part of American culture. And then the kind of reverse of that happened. You had all kinds of people from the local area up there come over and say, oh my gosh, I've always wanted to travel Route 66. And they give you this wonderful reason and story and connection that they feel towards the highway. Or maybe they traveled it a few years ago and all they want to do is come over and tell you everything they experienced because it's still something that's so vibrant in their memory. And I guess that's kind of two sides of the same coin. It's just that person-to-person connection that seemed to be a lot more prevalent overseas, at least when I traveled in 2009 and in 2010. I'm feeling like it's getting better here, and I do everything I can daily when I'm out on the road to further enhance that.
Yeah, how you talked about it a little bit, but like the community aspect over, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles, like is there community, would you say, between like the people in all the way out in New Mexico, Arizona, and the people up in Missouri? Like is that connection really there? And if not, can it be brought back?
It is in some ways, and in other ways, it's a little more difficult. You know, when the interstates came through and cut these towns off, you have a lot of areas where they, you know, don't really identify themselves as a Route 66 community anymore. Or if you have an underrepresented culture along the highway, they may not think Route 66 is their story, so to speak. And so that takes a lot of work and a lot of trust building with folks that, yeah, you know, Route 66 is part of your story and it is something worth celebrating. And there are people traveling this road every day that want to know that, that would stop, that would learn. And, you know, there'd be an exchange that happens. Social media has been really helpful for the Route 66 community. Facebook is still huge. Like the largest Facebook group I know of is called Historic Route 66, and it has north of 300,000 users. Of people that are engaged regularly. Maybe they're out taking pictures or they're business owners or whatever. But you have people all the time that hop in there to say, hey, I'm taking it next week. I've got a week between X and Y. What should I see? What should I do? And you have all 8 state organizations that are still engaged to various degrees to help tie their states together and letting them know what other states are up to. So, and a lot of roadies travel the road multiple times. Like it's like their constant vacation destination. So you have festivals like the Birthplace Festival up in Springfield, Missouri, or the Hot Air Balloon Festival out in Albuquerque, or Roadfest up here in Tulsa, where it's almost like a family reunion where people are able to get together and hang out and get caught up. But anytime one of us are out in another community, we're generally aware if we're part of the kind of close-knit advocate group. And we have what we call the Roadie Delivery Service. There's been more than one time I've been in Missouri and someone says, hey, I've got this and I need to get it down to Stroud, Oklahoma. Can you take it for me? And I'll put it in the back of the car and I'll take it as I go. And that happens constantly because you have this kind of informal network of people all along the highway. And I think that's another thing that for people that travel Route 66, by the time they get to the end of the highway and get their nice certificate at this little kiosk called 66 to Cali to say, hey, I've traveled all of Route 66, they feel like they've been welcomed into that family. And we see a lot of repeat folks that have said, well, I did it a few years ago and I'm doing it again.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Do you think there are any other highways that have formed like a similar community or identity, like other than Route 66?
Not at this scale. You still have a lot of highway associations that exist for the pre-Route 66 group, like the Jefferson Highway is doing really well right now. The Jefferson was a named highway that connected Winnipeg down to New Orleans. It was a north-south highway. And so they go out and do motor tours and they have a conference once a year and all that kind of stuff. They're doing great. The Lincoln Highway is another one that's still loosely organized and you've got some things that happen. None of them have the pull or that cultural hook that Route 66 does. And I don't know of any other highway in the world that serves as its own destination.
Yeah, I would have trouble thinking of one. Are there any other pretty exciting projects that you've been a part of that we haven't gotten to talk about yet?
Oh, I mean, there are a lot of events being planned for next year. Tulsa and Oklahoma City are both planning big events on May 30th to help celebrate the centennial. There is a documentary being filmed right now called Main Street of America. And this filmmaker, 30 years ago, did a documentary about Route 66 when it was in those early stages of revitalization. And so now he's taking that experience in the 90s and now where we are today and showing the progress of the road. I've had the opportunity to meet up with them a few times and kind of learn what they're doing. He put out a trailer for the movie and like, I can't watch it without getting emotional. You know, I'm very close to all this now. And so that's really special. They're doing a rolling road show next September for a release where they're going to be screening that documentary in historic theaters along Route 66 in 26 different cities. And the Oklahoma Route 66 Association is helping organize screenings in Oklahoma. And so we hope to have an announcement on which specific places on which days very soon for that. But that'll be an opportunity for these communities to come out and experience the story of today's Route 66 that hopefully they all feel close to, because we've all been working so hard to help revitalize the corridor and help with development. And the state has put a lot of money behind grants and things like that. So there's been a lot of movement. But again, I hate to sound like a broken record, but the things that I'm most proud of go back to the people. I've been working on some Google Arts and Culture stories that talk about the Davis family that built the Blue Whale and helped keep it going for years. Talking about Cyrus Avery, the father of Route 66, and not only his involvement in getting the highway established, but all the other things he helped accomplish in Tulsa and in the region, and just celebrating the people that make the road what it is, because anybody can pull over and take a picture with a roadside attraction, or, you know, stop and try to eat at the 72-ounce steak at the Big Texan Steakhouse in Amarillo. But when you talk to somebody and make a connection with them, when you get home, that's what you're going to remember. And everything we can do at an association level to help let people know that and encourage them to spend a little extra time and have those conversations, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, definitely. If anybody listening is interested in finding out more about your work, where's the best place to do that?
So OklahomaRoute66.com is a great resource. We're adding to it all the time. We have a trip guide that we produce. There's a digital version on the website. And you can also pick up the physical version at business member locations all across the state. We've been producing this guide since 1996, and it has maps in there so you can stay on the historic alignment, things to see and do in each community, educational material, historic interpretation. This is our baby. We love this, and it's a great resource. So I plug it anytime that I can. The National Trust for Historic Preservation has its Route 66 program. You can go to preserveroute66.org for that. And we're all over social media, both at an organizational level and me personally. I have a pretty wide digital footprint, and my first name's a little unique. So you plug Reese Martin into Google and you're going to find my Instagram. You're going to find my Blue Sky account, my Facebook, all that stuff. And as I'm out on the road and experiencing the highway and seeing the changes that are happening, I post that out as much as I can. So I encourage anybody that's interested in following along.
Well, Reese, thank you so much for joining me here today. I think this has been a really interesting and fun conversation.
Thanks, Kyler. I really enjoyed it.
Hey, it's me, Kyler. If you enjoyed this conversation, please be sure to give the show a like, rating, subscription, or whatever kind of nice feedback you can provide on whatever platform you're watching or listening from. If you'd like to join our community to stay up to date or to discuss anything you heard in today's show, consider joining the Oringo Urbanism Discord server. And finally, if you'd like to support the work of Oringo Urbanism directly, you can do so over on Patreon. Until next time.